This just in, the federal government and basically all the states have realized Facebook owns Instagram and WhatsApp, and they don't like it one little bit. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Wednesday today, it is the 9th day of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. There has been, to be sure, no shortage of regulatory complaints against Facebook over the years. This one, though, feels different, feels bigger somehow. The Federal Trade Commission and no less than 46 states of this union have brought antitrust complaints against the social media behemoth, saying it has unfairly bought or killed off all of its competition, and in the process built what amounts to an illegal monopoly. And here's the big deal, really, demanding they are, I guess I'm Yoda today, demanding that the company be split up. Marketplace tech host Molly Wood is here to make us smart. Hey, Molly.
Hey, Kai.
I don't know where that Yoda thing came from. Anyway,
or should I say Yoda?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So look, this breakup thing, the sought-after relief, that's the hammer. That's a big deal.
That is a really big deal. That is, I mean, as you alluded to at the beginning of the program, a lot of people still don't even know that Facebook owns Instagram and WhatsApp. They're very technically intertwined, in some cases, perhaps on purpose. And it's really unusual to demand a breakup. That is the hardest possible remedy, which, you know, the U.S. government doesn't usually seek. I mean, I think it is fair to say we have not seen a demand that big since the Microsoft case in the 90s.
Yeah. Facebook, of course, not going gently into that good night. What are they saying?
Facebook is calling this, quote, revisionist history. Because, as the company points out, the FTC approved both of those acquisitions of Instagram for $1 billion and WhatsApp for $19 billion. But that said, Facebook is, I am certain, deeply worried about this. We know that Mark Zuckerberg has been recorded saying that a breakup, and in fact, attempts to force a breakup by the government, are an existential threat to Facebook. It's made moves to, as I mentioned, more closely intertwine these products, making it harder technologically to break them up. Yeah. This is not going to happen quickly, obviously. Right. It's going to be a long and expensive fight. Facebook's made it clear that that's the case, but it's still a big problem. It's a big distraction, especially as the discovery period forces us to find out more, allows us to find out more about Facebook's business practices. And then, of course, there's scrutiny in Europe, too.
If I'm another tech company, am I worried that this is some kind of trend now?
I think so, because you also recently had a Department of Justice lawsuit filed against Google on antitrust and anti-competitive grounds. And if it signals specifically a direction around anti-competitive behavior and, you know, acquiring or killing competition, I definitely think that Apple is probably also having some thoughts. Some thoughts may be occurring at Apple today.
Paging Tim Cook to the microphone. Molly Wood is the host of Marketplace Tech, also a podcast we do together called Make Me Smart. Thank you, Molly.
Thanks, Kai.
Facebook shares on this antitrust Wednesday down just 1.9% on a down day overall, it should be said. Details, numbers, when we get there. At the risk of repeating myself, still bupkis from Congress on a deal for a relief package. And at the risk of repeating myself again, if Congress continues to not do anything, this economy could get a whole lot worse. Tens of millions of people are unemployed, as we know. Small and medium businesses hanging on by their fingernails, and local eviction moratoriums winding down all over the country. The federal one from the Centers for Disease Control ends on New Year's Eve. According to the Census Bureau, about 33% of American adults are at risk of eviction or foreclosure. And for millions of people, rental debt is piling up. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more on that one.
Paying rent used to be no big deal for 65-year-old Graciela Wade in Chicago. She's retired and on a fixed income, but was getting help with bills from her granddaughter and her granddaughter's then-girlfriend. Then the pandemic hit.
With my girls losing their jobs and me not being able to keep up with everything just makes it worse.
Wade hasn't paid rent since July and is now $3,500 behind and at risk of eviction. Just like about 14 million other households, says Emily Benfer, who leads the American Bar Association's task force on COVID-19-related evictions.
The mere fact of filing actually plummets credit scores, and it precludes people from seeking a mortgage in the future or a car title or even seeking employment.
Plus, even after someone is evicted, the debt stays with them. The Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia estimates more than 1 million households owe over $5,000 in rent.
We will see the impacts of debt owed by renters across this country for years to come.
Deborah Thrope is deputy director at the National Housing Law Project.
It's going to absolutely slow the economic recovery. And we know that there were millions of people at risk of eviction prior to the pandemic, and that number has only grown.
Thrope says if Congress does pass more COVID legislation, it needs to address the estimated tens of billions of dollars in past due rent. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
This program today is being brought to you pretty much the same way it's been brought to you since mid-March. Three people, two audio engineers, and yours truly, in about 20,000 square feet of really, really empty office space, and then a couple of dozen more people working from home. And if the latest report from Pew is any indicator, it might stay that way for a while. Nearly 90% of people, yes, 90% of people who've been able to work from home, Pew says, have no desire to go back to the office full time once it's safe to do so. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has more on what that might portend.
Jonathan Soon is in that majority of people who would very much like to keep working from home permanently.
At home, I have a window by where I work so I can open it and get fresh air or just look out the window.
There are no windows in the IT department where he works at a university in Southern California. He likes how quiet it is at home and not having to commute. Pew Research found that more than half of people whose jobs have allowed them to work from home during COVID want to keep doing it all or most of the time. Another third say they'd like to at least some of the time.
That's creating a lot of conversation about how we're going to operate in summer 2021.
Justin Drager runs a nonprofit in D.C. with about 45 people on staff, and nearly all of them now say they want to be able to divide their time between home and the office. And Drager is okay with that.
This idea of being in the office 5 days a week, I think, is a bygone era for companies that have successfully moved to telework.
And a lot have. Kate Lister with Global Workplace Analytics says the companies she's talking to in tech, law, banking, and insurance are planning to keep doing it after the pandemic ends.
We've reached the tipping point where there's enough companies that are going to be offering it that if you're a company that doesn't offer it or allow it, you're simply not going to be able to hold on to your people or attract the best talent.
That will be a welcome shift for people in industries where working from home is possible. But they're generally the Americans who earn the most. For most people, working from home isn't an option. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
If your social media feed is anything like mine, you're seeing a whole lot of people posting their Spotify 2020 playlists the past couple of weeks, the details of all the listening they did this year. But for a lot of the artists behind those playlists, especially the smaller independent ones, 2020 hasn't been so great. So with the year about to mercifully wrap up, we've gotten the rapper and writer Dessa back on the phone. Hey, it's good to have you back.
Thanks.
So when we spoke at the beginning of this thing back in March, your calendar, your gig calendar had just like vaporized. And I wonder 8 months, 9 months later on, how it's been through this whole summer and fall.
I mean, in some ways, I think most musicians are still looking at, you know, at calendars that are that don't have too much ink on them.
Yeah.
I remember talking to my agent and he was like, you know, use this time when this is all over. You want to look back and be able to say you really spent this time making something wonderful. And I remember like a month after getting that counsel, I was just like, this is not a writer's retreat, man. This is like a global crisis. I don't want to know. I don't want to spend my days thinking what rhymes with plague, you know, like, so in the beginning there was sort of a lull, but now 8 months in, you can hear the wheels humming again, you know, people are writing rad stuff. And I think, you know, as a consumer of music too, I think I've found myself leaning harder on art for comfort and distraction and all the things that we turn to art for. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so look, we all turn to art for comfort and distraction. Those of us on the consuming end, those of you on the producing end turn to art to pay the rent. And I don't imagine you've been able to do that. I mean, maybe you're making your rent. I don't know. That's none of my business. But the point is you can't really profit off of your art when your gig calendar has gone away.
Right. And even before the pandemic, like the alchemy of turning music into groceries had gotten really complicated. It had. And for all the reasons that a consumer can anticipate, most of us listen to some streaming services. Very few of us have two walls of our bedroom covered in vinyl. And so, you know, in the beginning, there were a lot of virtual concerts. Then I think a lot of us got pretty screened out, you know, as this thing rolled on. But there have been some exceptions. The cultural phenomenon that is Versus, where artists kind of battle it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's been a big win, obviously. But also Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the subscription models for art, essentially. Those have really, that has really boomed.
Which is cool, right? I mean, that's great that there's that resource for artists and musicians and others. But at some point, you're going to have to, and you're going to want to, and you're going to be able to get back into actually performing. And there are going to be clubs that open and venues that open. What do you anticipate that's going to be like? Because so many things in this economy have changed, and you have to believe that that sector, that space has as well.
You know the scene in a movie where, like, someone is sitting alone trying to figure out where the other survivors are, so they're tuning a radio to see who might still be out there?
Yeah.
I think we're approaching that scene. Like, we've got all these artists out here who are going to be watching the news to try to figure out what, you know, what's the timeline for the vaccine? When is it going to be healthy and safe to go back on the road? But, of course, we're all going to want to go at exactly the same time. The task, then, as we've got less inventory in these stages and a huge, huge number of musicians trying to play, is that when you don't get matched with the right room, you can take a serious financial hit. So, you know, in Seattle, which is one of my strongest markets, like the best I've ever done on my luckiest night was just over 900 heads paid. Well, if I can't get into a 900 cap room and I got to take a 500 cap, right? Okay, well, that bites into the bottom line. And on the other hand, if I can't get into a 900 cap, and so I got to play a 2000 cap, in addition to being a very humbling evening for young Des, like, I now have to pay for all of this, like, security staff that's unnecessary, right? There's a bottom line just to turn the lights on. So we end up with a lot of waste around the edges in a time when we're really hard-pressed to tolerate any waste at all.
But I imagine you're still jonesing to get out there, right?
Yes, like, you know, I'm eager. I miss it. And also, I mean, this is just emo, but it's just such a big part of who I thought I was, like as a human being, let alone as a professional.
She's a rapper. She's a singer. She's a writer. Her book, which I recommend really highly, is called My Own Devices. Came out a couple of years ago. Dessa, we'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Thanks for having me.
She's got new music coming out starting in January, by the way. A series of singles called Ides drops on the 15th of the month. Get it? Ides. Coming up.
It's frustrating because a lot of the questions they have, we don't have answers for.
Same. Totally same. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 105 points today, 0.3%, 30,068. The NASDAQ down 243, That is 1.9%, 12,338. The S&P 500 dropped 29 points, almost 0.8%, 36.72. $1 trillion. $1 trillion American simoleons. That's how much cybercrime costs every year. That's according to a new report from the computer security company McAfee and the Center for Strategic and International Studies. About 1% of global GDP, by the way. Speaking of cyber attacks, FireEye, the cybersecurity firm that announced yesterday it's been hacked by a hostile country, down 13% today. Shares in DoorDash hit the market for the first time. They closed up 85% in their debut. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Let your employees know you've got their back by signing up for Gusto for payroll and HR. More than 300,000 small business owners use Gusto. They offer benefits like health insurance, employee onboarding, and more. Get your payroll taxes filed, deductions calculated, and your team paid fast. No more pain. Just the joy of running your business. Get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The mayor of Los Angeles said this the other day as the coronavirus swamps Southern California hospitals. Hunker down, Eric Garcetti said, and cancel everything. That's the quote. Plans, travel, gathering, everything. And honestly, it's not just here, right? As the holidays approach, Americans pretty much all over the place are being asked to not go anywhere. How accommodating, though, are travel and lodging companies being about this, Marketplace's Jasmine Garst has that one.
Back in March, Ambrish Kochikar from Evanston, Illinois, was supposed to travel to India to visit family. Then India suspended entry with travel visas, so his wife and two kids...
they wouldn't even be able to get on to the airplane.
Kochikar had to cancel. He says not only did United Airlines not fully reimburse him, the cancellation fees amounted to $1,000.
It is totally unfair.
When we contacted United, they said they would look into it. Since March, most major airlines have dropped their ticket change fees through the end of this year. Angela Fontes is an economist with the American Council of Consumer Interests.
One of the things that's a little challenging is that the super saver type fares are the ones that are likely to have the most restrictive policies, specifically around cancellation.
It's also a patchwork of policies for lodging. Hotels vary, but for now, most chains, including Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt, and Holiday Inn, will allow most cancellations with no penalties. Airbnb, on the other hand, leaves it up to the host and the guest to negotiate possible refunds directly, but isn't promising anything unless one of the parties has COVID. Refunds for travelers are costs to businesses, and the travel and leisure industries are being hard hit by the pandemic. United Airlines forecast a 67% decline in revenue this fourth quarter compared to last year. Airbnb, which is going public tomorrow, had a 19% drop from last year. And Fontes says, while it may be hard to empathize with a company,
there are also employees who are being laid off as a result of this.
Cancellation fee or not, public health officials say health should come first. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Hey, here's an idea if you're looking for something to listen to tomorrow morning. David Brancaccio and the gang on the Marketplace Morning Report. Everything you need to know to start your business day. We started a project back in January about the American labor force. 10 people who roughly mirror who works in this economy and the jobs that they do. It has changed, that project has, obviously, because of everything. Now it's more about how those 10 people, and in a way, the rest of us, have been changed by everything. Michael Durant is one of them. He's a certified public accountant in New York City. Michael, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to speak with you.
First of all, how are you 9 months, whatever it is, into this pandemic?
It's starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, so I got an optimistic outlook.
That's my memory of you from that very first time we met, was that you are an optimistic kind of guy. How's business in the tax world? Let me just get that out of the way first before we move on to some other stuff.
You know, business is good, and it's also frustrating in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of people needing our work, but it's frustrating because a lot of the questions they have, we don't have answers for. You know, we're waiting for Washington to figure out what they're going to do.
Interesting. So when we spoke back in sort of the late spring, early summer, you shared that your mom had passed because of COVID, which leaves you with your brother AJ, with whom, you know, we had that great conversation that night in your apartment back last winter. How is he? He's like, what is he, like 17, 18 now, senior in high school?
Yeah, he's, you know, doing pretty well, you know, all things considered. I mean, teenager frustration with COVID and not being able to go to school, but he's attending school virtually. He submitted his college applications. You know, knock on wood, he gets accepted to one of his many schools that he wants to go to, far away, as he would put it. And, you know, I'm excited for him. I didn't get to go away for school, but I'm excited to see where he goes.
Yeah. So the New York City schools, as pretty much everybody who has paid attention to the news lately knows, is that they've been a little bit, you know, yes, you're coming in. No, you're not. Yes, you are. No, you're not. What has AJ been doing? Have you been sending him in when he could go in?
No, so we opted out in the beginning just because I felt New York City did not have a good plan in place. When by the time they were asking us to make a decision, AJ wasn't happy with the choice, but he quickly adjusted because his friends that did go into school, he saw what the way the school was set up, and he was like, I'd rather get up just like if I was in college 10 minutes before class starts. And he's getting the college experience virtually in a sense.
Yeah. Let me back up for a minute, and this is maybe a little more personal than I intended to get, but I'm going to give it a try, and you can answer it or not. You are a guy in his mid-30s-ish, right? Plus or minus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Early, yeah.
Okay, all right, early 30s. I get it, sorry. and now, because of this disease and the pandemic, you are the guardian for a 17-year-old young man. Sort of out of nowhere. I mean, I imagine it had occurred to you that this might happen one day, but I would guess it happened earlier than you thought. And I wonder, you know, you're responsible and you're ambitious, and we've talked about your education track and your investments and all of those things that you in your own life have plotted out. But now you have this kid that you're responsible for too, kind of out of nowhere. And I wonder what that does to you.
You know, surprisingly, it's for me, other than having to focus on him more on a daily basis, not much has changed. We've always been pretty close, and, you know, I plotted my life out as a family to like gain skill sets and move forward together. And given all this over the past, you know, 9 months, you know, if anything, it brought me and my brother closer. The stress was there in the beginning, but I was able to plot a path forward, and it's good.
I don't want to make this all about AJ, but so look, if the vaccine works out and by the fall colleges are back in session and he gets to go far away, as you said he wants to do, you're kind of on your own, man.
Yeah. I think I'm on my own, at least, depending on how far he goes. It's interesting to see. I want to see how our relationship goes, because we're, you know, we live together, we're close. When he goes away, will I just become like the person I call once a week just to let them know I'm still alive?
Yeah.
So I'm interesting to see how that goes. And I want to give him the space to really branch out and grow personally at school. So I'm looking forward to it, even though I know my movie nights will no longer have him. At least, you know, I don't have to share the popcorn.
Fair enough. Michael Durant, he's an accountant in New York City, part of our series, The United States of Work. Michael, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Final note on the way out today. I don't want anybody to get alarmed, but we have got a crisis on our hands here, people. Campbell Soup reported profits this morning. They did fine, made money, whatever. But cookies. Campbell owns Pepperidge Farm, maker of, among other cookies, Milano's, my favorite, after my daughter's chocolate chips. But anyway, the company said it is having cookie ingredient, and this is the quote, supply constraints. We have been telling you lately, supply chains are everything. Well, here you go. Also, turns out we're just eating more cookies trapped as we are at home. Bloomberg, where I saw this story, says almost 40% of Americans eat 48 or more cookies a month. Cookie demand, Pepperidge Farm says, is sustained and very strong. All right, we got to go. Got a little squeezed today, so go forth and find your own moments of economic context. We'll make it up to you. Our media production team is Robin Edgar, Drew Jostad, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebold, Charlton Thorpe, Ben Tolliday, and Becca Weinman. They're the ones coming into the studio so the rest of us don't have to, unless, of course, your home internet is terrible. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.